Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very young and accomplished entrepreneur from the UK, Mr. Nish Parikh. Nish, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Nish is the co-founder of Kapra, the off-cut company. And Kapra, for those of you who don't understand, is the Hindi word for cloth. Nish is also the founder of the Sustainable Hub. So Nish, first, let's talk about Kapra, the off-cut company. Tell me about this venture and what is the meaning of off-cut?
So we work with a lot of interiors and fashion designers to reuse their fabric offcuts and convert them into sustainable products. Now, going back to your question, what is an offcut? So for general public, any shirt, t-shirt, garment, jeans, dresses you wear, there's always small pieces leftovers. In India, you call them, in Hindi, called chindi, which you never really pay attention to. But when you put all of them together, there are a lot of them. Secondly, the other offcut is, so for example, let's say Marks and Spencer's decides to create 10,000 shirts. They will buy material for, let's say, 10,100 because as a backup, you know, just in case if something goes wrong in manufacturing. 9 out of 10 times, nothing goes wrong. So they have that last 100 meters or 10 meters left over, which is again an offcut because that's never going to be used. It's not enough to make a collection. And then there are test prints and misprints. So for example, if a designer is planning to create a new fabric, they will test it on 10 different materials, you know, for a few meters. They'll check 10 different colors, but those will never get out in the market because they're just test prints. So again, that is an offcut as well. So all of these three different types of offcuts, we've been working with various shapes and sizes, with meterage, with rolls. And yeah, that's what an offcut is.
Amazing. So what was your motivation to start this venture? And do share the story of the first bookmark that you crafted.
So I think the motivation goes back to my mom. I finished my master's in London and I was visiting her. And she is a fashion designer. She has a couple of high street stores. So I went to one of her studios and you know, I asked her, what do we do with the offcuts? And she said, you know what happens? Either they just get stacked up at the back of the room or some rag picker will pick it up or, you know, it there's no real use to it. And so being a fashion designer's son, I've seen offcuts all my life, as you would have imagined. And I think that's when I sat down with her and her, her studio manager and we cut out two rectangular pieces and we pasted and stitched together and put a branding on it. And that was our first offcut product, which was a bookmark.
Wow.
We then put it in her store as customer purchase gifts. You know, so if someone bought something from a store, they would just get like a thank you present as a bookmark. And then I came back to the UK. And a couple of months later, I got a call from my mom saying, you know what? It's not just customer purchase gifts. We've been selling a lot of these as well.
Wow.
And I think that was the sort of light bulb moment that, you know, there is something which we could explore here. Why doing good to the environment and, you know, making it into a sort of a business.
Wow. So, you know, every entrepreneur like you gets a great idea and takes it to the logical conclusion. But there are a lot of challenges that we face when we start to scale up. I'd love to understand some of your challenges.
So I think the first thing which I always say when someone does ask me that, you know, how do you start? And I say, look, if you think that you need, let's say, £10,000 to start your business, please double it. So whatever your calculation is, please double it because that's what you would need, how much of a shoestring budget it is. I think when it came to scaling up, you know, I would say that most of us would write a business plan or a sort of a PowerPoint presentation as a guideline to where you want the business to be in 2 years' time, 5 years' time, 10 years' time. But in real life, what I've learned is it's a guiding document. There will be times when you will have to adapt. And for the good of a business. So I would say that, you know, do adapt. And we call it bootstrapping. So if there is an opportunity, then don't get stuck. Oh, no, my business plan only says I'm going to do A to B. But if there's an opportunity to do B to C, then might as well do it as well.
Very interesting. And, you know, I was looking at some of the stuff that you're doing. You know, there's such amazing designs. My question to you is, where do you get the inspiration for such incredible designs?
I think the ethos of the business, you know, for me, when we started, it was very clear that we want to create as many day-to-day products from fabric offcuts. So, for example, if you take a notebook or a journal or a pouch or a bag, you know, all of these things, most of it, what we currently buy comes from raw material, new material, which that new material is made using a lot of natural resources. But you don't need to use those natural resources because these offcuts are already available and they're new and they're nice. And why don't you just use that? And that's how, you know, every time we have a challenge that, okay, here's a different size of an offcut, what can we create? And then we just, our team just comes up to say, okay, let's make a card wallet, let's make a headband, a scrunchie. So we just feel that the more options we have, it just becomes easier for people to buy into it. And then it just becomes a part of life to buy day-to-day products. And also a lot of support we've had, like we've had collaborations with Selfridges, we've had collaborations with the Met Museum, with a lot of designers like Alice and Olivia, So it's a lot of people who would like to do something like that. And, you know, that helps. And of course, it was a bigger challenge to get through them. But it's a step-by-step process.
Amazing. So, you know, you work with many global brands. And you gave me an example of Marks and Spencer and the extra cloth that they have left. How are global brands accepting designs made from off-cut clothes?
I would say initially it was very challenging. When I started around 5 years ago, there was no talk on sustainability. No one really sort of put in any effort or any money towards it. But that's why I said, you know, it was just difficult. We were literally knocking on doors of designers in London, you know, like shops and high street stores to see what we can get. But I think over a period of time, and we've proven the model works, because what we're doing is we're actually monetizing their waste. You know, and when you put it that way to any for-profit business, you know, they start thinking, okay, so for example, this material of the last 1 meter they have, it's already paid for, right? Now they're just sitting in their warehouse doing nothing. Now if they send it to us or work with us, we can create, let's say, 10 notebooks out of it. And then they can charge, you know, £20, £30, £40 for each notebook. And then they see, oh, you know what? That's actually making us money. And also recently, it's ticking a lot of sustainable boxes. So, you know, then they say, okay, you know what? First it was the money thing. Now it is consumers are being aware that, you know, which what their brands are doing with their waste. So, you know, this is a good example to put forward.
Amazing.
So that's where we sort of come from.
Fantastic. And for our viewers and listeners, what are some of the sustainability challenges when it comes to cloth?
I mean, personally, our business, we don't have a say in what kind of cloth we receive because we receive offcuts. But the sustainable challenges, I would say, is once you make your ethos to say you're going to work with, let's say, a local supplier, you're going to work with a family-run business rather than working with larger courier companies. It's great because it works well with your ethos, but there are some pitfalls, because what a DHL can offer me, a small courier company will not be able to offer me. What a regular material buying from the store, which is a super, like a big store, is a big supplier, compared to a small supplier, which is local to you, you know, there's a huge difference. So to keep up those commitments is difficult. But, you know, it gets, you can streamline it, because then you can have a backup supplier as well. You learn from it, rather than saying, you know what, I'm actually just going to go and buy virgin material rather than going buying recycled material.
Interesting.
So, yeah, interesting. I feel that. And it's the entire supply chain. It's not only just one part of it.
And for some, for a business that's growing and where your raw material is predominantly offcuts, How do you manage the sourcing, or how do you manage your supply chain?
I mean, most of it is we work with designers. Mm-hmm. So what happens is the designers come up to us and say, Nish, can we create something from our waste?
Mm-hmm.
And we are actually knowing what kind of waste they have in terms of whether it's meterage, whether it's sizes, whether it's boxes.
Mm-hmm.
We then come up with ideas to make it for the designer itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not actually sourcing the materials and then selling it ahead.
Mm.
So the source comes from the designer, who is at the end of the day, my customer as well.
Wonderful. Terrific. So Nish, now let's move to the other organization that you founded, which is the Sustainable Hub. Tell me about this venture and what are your objectives?
So during the lockdown period, we came across three challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we all had a lot of time at that point.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of internal discussion. So A, that a lot of our clients, because we work with 300 plus designers worldwide,
mm-hmm.
Were struggling to keep up with their minimum order quantities mm-hmm. When it came to garment manufacturing. Second challenge which we came across was the shift in consumer purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you go to a store and you buy a t-shirt, they'll just give you in a paper bag and you're done.
Mm.
But if you buy the same thing online, they will have to package it in a, wrap it up in a tissue paper,
mm.
put it in a bag, and then put it in a mailer bag. So you see the amount of packaging increases.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third challenge was the Generation Z was starting to look into the supply chain of the brands they were buying.
Mm.
So, you know, all three combined, we thought, you know, there is an opportunity here. The idea of the Sustainable Hub is to manufacture garments and manufacture the packaging with raw material, like growing the crops, all under one roof. So, you know, there's also no carbon footprint, right? You know, a lot of designers now manufacture in one state
mm-hmm.
or one country, and then their packaging is manufactured in a different country, and then it flies around. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't make any sense because of the minimum order quantities, and not a lot of small and medium designers can actually move into this space.
Mm.
So hence the idea of the hub was to have everything under one roof.
Okay. And do you, whether it's for Kapra or the Sustainable Hub, do you do manufacturing in the UK or in some other country?
So we have manufacturing unit in London,
mm-hmm.
as well as we do our manufacturing in India.
Okay.
And the hub, because of the weather and the plants which we need, it mm-hmm. is in India as well.
Very interesting. So now talking sustainability, you know, you said the Gen Z and even millennials, everyone, the younger generation is so conscious of sustainability. I wanted to get your perspective on how seriously is sustainability being taken in the corporate world, say the world of fashion or the world of large organizations that you deal with?
I feel there's a lot of greenwashing mm-hmm. and a lot of tick boxing.
Mm.
Because, for example, if a brand was committed to sustainability, they will not create like just 10 lines out of their 100 lines, which is sustainable
mm.
or made from organic cotton.
Mm.
Why can't you make the shift? Mm. You know, you are one of the largest brands in the world. You can do it. You have your investors. You have your followers. You know, why not make the big switch?
Mm-hmm.
But that reduces the profits. So that's why, you know, it's more of a greenwashing to say, oh, this is what we do. And, you know, this is our line and this is our eco line and this is our organic line. But mm-hmm. why should it be separate? Why can't it just be a norm? Mm-hmm. And when it becomes a norm,
mm-hmm.
you and I will know that, you know, sustainability is now the forefront of every business.
Correct. And when you look at the young consumer, and you know, you deal with designers, and I'm sure you talk to many consumers, you're a consumer yourself. How conscious is the young consumer to ensuring that the product she or he buys is from a sustainable source?
I think especially over the lockdown period,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people have reflected back into their various habits, whether it's living a lifestyle or whether it's buying. Working with which brands they want. But I feel that there is a bit of a distance, because what the millennials or the young people would like to buy and what is available in the sustainable market, there is a price difference. You know, there's a huge gap.
Mm.
So, you know, if something you can go and buy for I give you an example in pounds, like a 15 pound t-shirt, but if the same 15 pound t-shirt I want to go and buy from a sustainable supplier, I'll have to pay 30 pounds. Now, as a student, do I want to spend that money? Do I want to spend that extra 15 pounds when I've just got into a job? You know, that's my worry. You know, until a lot of people do it, only then we can get the pricing down. So, you know, until we match the pricing, I mean, that's what we do with our business. You know, we try and match our pricing with the normal products available in the market. And, you know, that's how you encourage people to switch. But if you sell it too high, then, you know, there are very few people or a niche which would buy it. You know, that's what happened with electric cars. Right. You know, they were there for 5 years or 10 years ago. We've been talking about it. You know, Teslas were selling, but, you know, they were premium. But as soon as they came up with a normal model, which was equivalent to the Mercedes and the BMWs, you could see Teslas everywhere. So, you know, that's the difference which we need to move on when it comes to consumers.
Well said. But tell me, Anish, I mean, I didn't understand one thing, that in cloth or garments, why should sustainable products be so much more expensive than non-sustainable ones, if I can use that term?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of paperwork, in my opinion. A lot of certification which goes into it.
Okay.
And, you know, you need to tick boxes. Oh, you know, this is the whole paperwork. This is where it comes from. This is where it goes. So, you know, that increases the cost of the designers or a brand slightly. And the raw materials, of course, because it's done. I mean, I've seen workshops where they say it's organic, but they produce the non-organic in the same farm as well. So, you know, it makes no difference. But also it's an opportunity for designers to come up and charge more because they say, oh, this is a premium product because it's sustainable. But that's the mindset which we need to break. You know, why does sustainability have to be, you know, expensive or whether it has to be cheap and tacky like craft? Because when I started the business, I visited a fair, and when I saw like a photo frame made of an old keyboard, you know, you would buy that to give someone or for yourself just for fun, but you would not have it on your everyday desk. Similarly, the other spectrum which I saw was someone who was making tables out of pallets, and they were costing 2,000 pounds. And suddenly you're like, where is sustainability in the middle? There's no mass sustainability. It's either too niche or too crafty. So I think that's where we need to come to. More and more people do it, I think it will narrow down the gap.
You're so right. I mean, it's exactly the same for organic farming. You know, something that is being given natural fertilizers and natural inputs, the product is significantly higher, which is why the offtake is so much lower. But what a great example. So, Nish, I'm going to now move on. I've got time for two or three questions for you, and my guests or my viewers love to get to know my guest a little better. So I have a few questions for you that I call personal questions.
Okay.
My first question to you, Nish, is what would you say in your very, very young life, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your life or career?
I think the first one comes to me is, you'll probably laugh, but, you know, I got a chance to, I love cricket. As most of the world does, or let's say all the Indians do. I got a chance to play at the Lords in a charity game. So being someone who's played on the streets and the backyards in India and then getting a chance to play at the Lords, that was a big milestone. And, you know, that's what probably taught me that, you know, it's nothing's like never, it's not impossible. You know, you can, and it will come if it's your, it will be your way. It will come across, but you have to work towards it. And, you know, you have to put time. So our cricket club, you know, we had like a 200 year anniversary and, you know, we didn't know this was going to come, and we got invited to play at the Lords, you know, which was a big thing. And then, but to get picked in the top 11 was even bigger because we got a few hundred people in the club. So
fantastic.
I think that's one of them. And I almost got out the first ball. It was a run out. The umpire looked at me and I was like, please don't give me out. So, but he did not. So it was good. I think the second was the, is a challenge, a sort of a milestone, sorry, is to create a business which is doing good for the environment, but is also a profitable venture. You know, I get asked a lot, oh, are you a not-for-profit? Are you a charity? I mean, why should I be a charity? Why should be a not-for-profit? Just because I'm a sustainable business. But that's the mindset to change. And I think we've changed it. I mean, we've probably played a very small part in it, but it has changed, you know, people's mindset, and people are moving into sustainability and eco-living with the mind that, you know, it is profitable and it could pay your bills rather than just doing good to the environment and the world.
Okay. So time for two more questions. My next question is on failure. And I have a book written on failure. And I've often said that a lot of parents in India, South Asia, don't teach children it's okay to fail. We're always taught first in class, head of the line, et cetera, et cetera. And yet we make mistakes. We learn. So my question to you, Nish, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I think initially when I started the business, as most of the entrepreneurs would think, want to get into retail to sort of get into maximum stores, you know, to people to order. And for that, you go to trade shows. So I remember the first trade show we showcased was at Top Drawer in London. And being a naive entrepreneur, I thought, yeah, let's just do it. And we booked a stand. And when I got there, I didn't have a clue that there were professional stand makers, you know, but I made my stand by myself. And then I thought the first day of selling, I was like, yeah, today I'm going to get a lot of orders. I did not. 3 days in a row, we stood there, didn't get any orders. And that's when we realized or learned that, you know, the buyers who come to these shows do not buy the first time they see you. You know, once they see you in a few more trade shows, they have more faith, and then that's when they order. So that was one of the learning things and the failure which we had. Second is I never attended a Top Drawer show. So I would surely recommend to anyone listening, please do attend the trade show first before showcasing. And the third thing, what we learned is, so we were almost, there was a point where we had to shut shop, you know, because we were selling business to consumer. We had in around 40 independent shops in the UK. But because at that point, 5 years ago, people were not talking sustainably, they just didn't get our concept. So we had to decide whether we want to shut shop or not. And, you know, we just didn't give up. We were like, no, something will come. And then we did get a call from one of the designers to make something from their offcuts. And that's when the business pivoted. And so, you know, it's sort of learning a lot. And we still learn. I think I learn every day. You know, we get challenges thrown at us daily, whether it's government red tape or whether it's, you know, applying for something or some designer, but you've got to go on with it.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And Nish, my last question to you, and this is for the many, many young people who will be watching our conversation. What would your advice be to a young entrepreneur who's starting off on her or his journey? And you've already given one advice, make sure you have double the amount of money that you need.
I'm sure you've interviewed a lot more experienced people than me. But my take would be get into something what you love doing rather than doing it just for financial gains. Because there will be a point after a few years or 5 years or 10 years that you will achieve your financial goals. But the thing which will keep you going is something because you love it, you're passionate about it. And even in the beginning, you'll surely need that passion in the first 5 years. There's no doubt, because you need something to keep going every day when you wake up. And the success will then follow. But I still feel that do something which you love, or else don't do it just for the monetary sake of it. Otherwise, you know, it's only going to be a very short journey, in my opinion. And enjoy it. You know, you've got to enjoy every day, ups and downs. You know, don't get bogged down if you have a few bad weeks. You know, that's a third one which will be good.
Fantastic. You know, on that note of do something that you love and enjoy it, Nish, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for having me. Thank you for talking to me at such length about the incredible offcut company that you're creating. And thank you for teaching so many of our viewers and listeners how a sustainable business can be profitable and you can follow your passion. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.